This is the Edinburgh Reporter podcast, and today we're with the Transport Convener, Scott Arthur, Councillor Professor Scott Arthur. I never know which order to put those in, Scott.
Just call me Sir.
Okay, I'm going to ask you, I know I could go on about this all the time, but I do want to ask you, are you going to be Transport Convener in a year's time, or do you just still not know? You told everybody last year that you were going to do it until somebody else was perhaps more prepared or whatever. It now seems we're stuck with you, so I'm kidding. So what is your position? Is your position now that you are going to be
Still interim, I think. You know, we've got our group AGM in May where these things are reviewed. I think what I thought was interesting was there was one of the opposition parties did try to change some of the positions on committees before Christmas, and I wasn't one of the ones to target it, so I took that as a tiny compliment. But and I was joking yesterday, I don't know if you caught that part of the meeting where they were talking about the deliverability of active and public transport plans, action plans, and a joke that if they weren't delivered by 2030, I would have to resign.
So. Oh, well, so we are stuck with you. Well, that answers one of my questions. So I really want to talk a wee bit more broadly. You had four big plans which came to committee yesterday. I think it was three. And they were all passed, and now, from now, you now move on to public consultation stage. So one of the criticisms which was levelled against your plans yesterday was that the Tories said that they needed to be more detailed before they were put out for consultation. So is that a valid criticism of your, I think that was in relation to the active travel plans. Is that a valid criticism, do you think?
So it was actually four plans yesterday. So we had the circulation plan, active travel, public transport, which is really close to my heart, and we also had the parking action plan. So whilst a small report, it does have equal weighting. And then, of course, before Christmas, we had approved for the same consultation, road safety action plan, and quite importantly, the air quality action plan. So all these action plans do link together.
Yeah, and that's why you said at the very beginning of the meeting you were going to hold an overarching hour-long, at least, discussion over all of them rather than trying to pick bits out of each, which probably a good idea for timekeeping apart from anything else.
So I was a little bit hard on the Conservatives before the meeting. I went to meet them and I said that, well, you're just asking for more detail as a stalling tactic. You don't want to say you're against these things. You don't want to say you're for, so asking for more detail is a stalling target. But I think I drew the conclusion that it is genuine from them. So I think that, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but I think broadly they support what we're trying to do, but they did feel a need for more detail before they could, actively support it. And overall, I think that's quite good. So yesterday we had, for all the plans, we had, I think most of the parties were in a place where they wanted to support what we wanted to do, but some reservations. It's a shame that it came down to votes in the end. I was really disappointed by that, but we got through it, and now we can start the consultation exercise. So the Conservatives are probably right that, ideally they'd probably want more detail, but the answer to that as well is that, well, what we can do is use the consultation responses themselves to help us define in more detail what we want to do. And really what we've got now is, broad ambitions about, improving walking around the city, making public transport, more efficient, more reliable. Mm.
That was breaking off for a moment from all your big plans. One of the other things that happened at the Transport Committee was that the chief executives of Lothian Buses and the Trams came to the meeting along with George Lauder, who heads up Transport for Edinburgh. And it's quite interesting to hear that their passenger numbers are really getting back, quite substantially back to what they were before the pandemic, perhaps with glitches here and there at the beginning of the week, rather, and the weekends are then busier because maybe people are working from home. But that, I thought that was quite a positive, positive stance from them.
Yeah, and I was speaking to the MD of another bus company who's based in England a couple of weeks ago, and We did talk about the recovery of Lothian buses, and he was really impressed with where Lothian buses are compared to where bus companies are elsewhere in the UK. Particularly the fact that their mileage, you know, the total mileage the buses do each day is at 83%, but their passenger recovery is slightly above that, 85%. So that's a good place to be, a good place to build on. But at the heart of this is the work, and really serious work, that Lothian's done around driver recruitment. So they've invested a lot of time and effort in trying to encourage people to step up to be bus drivers for Lothian. You know, fantastic job, including, and Sarah spoke about this yesterday, Sarah Boyd, the MD of the bus company, including reaching out to the many Hong Kong citizens we've got who have just moved to the UK as a result of the turmoil in Hong Kong. And also the Ukrainians. We've got thousands of Ukrainians here, and lots of these are professional drivers. Mm-hmm. So it's about just building that momentum around driver recruitment, which is fantastic. And the other thing she's done as well is she's improved the package for existing employees. Because being a bus driver in a congested city is actually quite a stressful job. So she, you know, so little things like, you know, giving bus drivers a bus pass that they can share with family members or perhaps a friend.
Yeah, that's a real perk, isn't it? Yes, it really is.
I wish she would offer me a free one, but that's not happening.
Well, you can get one as a counsellor, but you don't take very many of your either expenses or perks as a counsellor. I know. I've actually had a shot of driving a bus. I was disappointed they didn't let me loose on a double decker, but they let me drive a single decker round the garage at Longstone, and it was scary how much of the bus is actually on your left and that you have very little perception. And I've driven a car for a long time, but driving a bus is quite different. And then you put the passengers into the mix, and but they go through quite intensive training. I heard all about it. It was quite interesting. And it's a year before they allow you to drive a double decker as well.
So you're stuck with bungalow buses.
You have to go on the end 30 in the one, isn't it? Something like that.
So I've been through part of the training for the tram. So I've driven the simulator.
Yeah.
And I've driven an actual tram as well, but only inside the depot.
Well, they don't let you loose on all of that. So going back to all your various plans, which were passed yesterday, and as I said, they go forward for public consultation. So the public have roundly criticised the council in the past for consulting and then it would appear doing nothing with people's feedback or whatever. And I know your view is that this is not a referendum, that it's a place where people can make their views known and they will be looked at. So what do you do with the result of a consultation? How do you meld them into your policy then going forward?
So firstly, the problem with consultations is we tend to get relatively low responses. And that means that lobby groups, who quite sometimes can be quite persuasive, can sometimes skew the results a little bit. So we do have to be careful with that. And there are examples, not just in the transport domain, but you know, wider council consultations where lobby groups have influenced things like that. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of what happens with consultations. And I think also with consultations where we already have existing policy in place. So we do have a policy in place to reduce car miles in the city by 30%. And so we're not consulting on that aim, because that's already approved. What we're consulting on is how we do it, not if we do it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important to remember as well. We've established policy, and so it's about how we do it. Mm-hmm. And these are difficult things, and this is about change, but it's really a transition, 7 years. And so what we're saying is, this is our approach to reaching that aim of cutting congestion by 30%, well, reducing car miles by 30% by 2030. That's the aim. This is our plan to deliver that. What do you think of that? How can we improve it? And actually, if you think there's a better way of doing it, tell us about it as part of the consultation. And so when the consultation report comes back, what we'll do is we'll look at the opinions within the report, look at some of the ideas that's come forward, and we'll use that to either completely review what we're doing, perhaps, or I think more likely, see how we can improve how we're doing and fine-tune it.
Okay. So you do take note of what people say, and you would encourage people to respond to all these consultations, putting words in your mouth. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I would say is, I mean, Edinburgh is a very unequal city, both in terms of income levels and also people's mobilities. You know, people, some people have quite significant problems, challenges getting around the city just now, others less so. So really we want to reach the complete diversity of people in Edinburgh, all backgrounds, all income levels, everything, and really get into, I think I said yesterday, the nooks and crannies to make sure people are part of this conversation. Because this is big, it's a lot of money, yes, and it's going to take 7 years, so it's big. So yeah, people should get involved.
A couple of the headlines in my own head that I remember from reading these reports is that you're going to, that there are, is it 70,000 or 17,000 missed drop curbs?
17.
Thank goodness it's not 70. So 17,000 dropped curbs in the city are missing, and you are going to remedy those at the rate of one a day. And you're also going to put out lots of benches for people when they're walking, that kind of thing. And those kind of things seem like common sense to me. But I know that there is a backlash that people do think that they ought to be able to drive in the city. And the overarching theme to all of these plans is that no, people are not really going to be able to drive in the city.
So as it stands, Edinburgh is one of the most congested cities in the UK. And, you know, and I think the TomTom report said we are the most congested city in the UK. So we have to respond to that, because that impacts on our economy and it impacts on our well-being. And in addition to that, before Christmas, to meet, you know, government house building targets, we set aside land for a further 37,000 houses. And so if we do nothing, that's only going to make the congestion problem worse. So it's really important that we respond to that. And we're doing that primarily by we're doing that primarily by investing in, you know, walking, cycling, and also public transport. And we're going to see a big expansion in the capacity of public transport, its reliability and its efficiency over the next 7 years. And that's absolutely core to this. But I accept that there will still be some journeys and some people for whom a car is absolutely right. And I think the example I gave this yesterday is actually my lovely wife, who is a nurse. So she left her work this morning at 6:30. She works in end of life care for the NHS. And she'll get back this evening at 8:30. And that, she took the car today. Normally she would cycle, but she normally, maybe once a week she'll drive. And so today was that day. And so for her, I mean, I'm not going to say to her, actually, I think that on top of working 13 hours, I think you should be cycling as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bearing in mind that she's not as young as she was when we first met as well.
Oh, I hope she doesn't listen to this, Scott.
but there will be for some people that the car is still the way for some journeys.
For certain journeys.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So what all we're saying is, if you use your car 100 times a month or 100 times a year, maybe there's 30 times where it might be better for you and better for the city if you walk or take the bus. You know, it's not about taking people's car keys off them, absolutely not. It is about just moving the city in the right direction over the next 7 years. It's a transition.
And so I have one thing I did want to ask you about was what's going to happen to people who park on pavements, and why is enforcement not already in place, or why wasn't it already in place? What's your what's the council planning for that? That's part of your parking action plan.
Yeah, so my bus on the way into town today, it was delayed very slightly because of a Land Rover Defender which was parked on the footpath right next to the bus stop. So the bus had to articulate to get around it. It wasn't the end of the world, but of all the places to park, I didn't think that was the best place. So the law is going to change around pavement parking at the end of the year. We're going to get powers that we can use if we choose to stop people from parking on the pavement, basically fine them. And we're going to take those powers and we're going to use them to their full extent.
And you're going to give them to parking attendants rather than depending on the police to do that kind of enforcement, or the police as well?
So the expectation will be that the parking attendants will enforce. So that's about, I think I'm right, well, all footpath parking there's some exemptions. So obviously emergency services, that we can't find them and we wouldn't want to, but also if they're going about their business, but also I think courier companies, etc., can still park on the pavement for a limited period of time, which I'm not particularly happy with, but that's the legislation we have. Mm-hmm. But that as far as the rest of the powers we're going to get, the aim is to use them to their full extent, absolutely. And they'll be enforced by parking attendants, and I think possibly the police could still use their powers under obstruction. But I think when I speak to the police about this, they say, you know, dealing with pavement parking right now with the powers that they have, you know, obstruction is often not a priority for them because they've got what they consider more serious crimes. But of course, people who use wheelchairs, this dominates their life, people parking on the pavement.
Absolutely.
I say dominates, it holds them back. It's unacceptable.
Yeah, it really does. So I have a couple of more questions for you. You'll be glad to know. The city bike hire scheme was long awaited, perhaps didn't work out as well as was expected, and then Serco then walked away from the deal or during the last administration. Now we're told that a new city hire bike hire scheme might cost £20 million over a five-year period. Is there any likelihood of it, or does the council have to pay for it?
Well, I think that's an important question. The cycle hire scheme, you know, it is looking expensive if we want to do it well, without a doubt. I mean, we could do it. We can go to a smaller scheme, perhaps the scale of what we had previously, or even smaller, but to do it well and really get the benefits, we have to go for that bigger scheme. But I think, and what I said yesterday during the committee is if we do make the decision to go for a council-supported scheme, which is going to cost millions of pounds, we have to know what it's there to do. So it's not just a scheme for councillors to get their picture taken next to and get, you know, in nice pictures on the front page of the evening news, or perhaps even the Edinburgh Reporter's fantastic newspaper. But it has to be a scheme there that delivers a lot of traditional benefits. So is it connecting people who are visitors here for a tourist economy to help connect them to tourist destinations within the city? Is it something that we want students to use? Is it about getting people who are inactive active? Is it a gateway to cycling? So you start off with bike hire, then you go on to buying your own bike. So we'll have to figure out what we want to do, and we'll have to quantify those benefits. And right now, I don't see that happening, and certainly in terms of the money that it's going to need with the cuts that we're facing in the coming weeks, It's hard to see how it's going to get through a budget, but I'll keep an open mind about this. Mm-hmm. So one of the groups yesterday, they proposed that actually right now the council should just go to a concession model, so let a private company run the system in Edinburgh. And that's what you're talking about. Does the council have to get involved? And I think there is merit in certainly looking at that. And I think if we can tame it so we don't have bikes on footpaths and all that kind of thing, you know, in terms of when they're not getting used, I think it is something we should keep on the table. So I'm definitely not ruling it out. And actually, around, I think, 6 weeks ago now, I had a company who came up to speak to me about exactly wanting to do just that. I'm quite frank with them, I didn't have confidence that they would be able to deliver the scheme in the way Edinburgh wanted, but I think that's we should keep an open mind about these things.
Anything that comes back, we'd have to be an awful lot better in infrastructure terms, really, than we had. I mean, the docking stations were found to be not fit for purpose. They disappeared gradually and incrementally because of vandalism over the time that they were there. There's nothing wrong with the bikes, it was just that they were getting vandalised or whatever.
Yeah, we went for the most expensive bike, and it turned out it was incredibly vulnerable as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think if we went for some schemes go for incredibly cheap bikes, and I guess they can afford to have an attrition rate, but you've got bikes that are worth well over £1,000 each, I think they were.
Gosh.
Yeah. And, you know, if you look at the £20 million for the scheme that we looked at yesterday in committee, over the 4 or 5 year period that works out, it's over £12,000 per bike.
My goodness.
I mean, think of the difference you could make if we invested that money in different ways to make Edinburgh more accessible for people.
Exactly. So just to kind of wrap up on all your plans, the active travel budget, I think I'm correct in saying, is £1 billion?
More or less, yeah.
Gosh,
yeah.
That sounds like a lot of money. It's coming from the government or Sustrans or somewhere.
So this is interesting, and we'll go back to where we started off about me being interim transport convener. So I can remember when one of the first things I did was I had a meeting around the data that Sustrans publishes about bike usage in the city. I can't remember if you were there or not, maybe you couldn't make it. And there was a bit of cynicism then because I was the new transport convener and people thought, oh, this new administration isn't going to do much about active travel. And that's kind of stuck about, some of it's political, but I think some people genuinely had concerns about the change in administration. But I don't think anybody back then would have even dreamt, and I mean this, well, maybe some people have actually dreamt that we'd be sitting just now with £1 billion worth of active travel on the table. Yeah. And also people in the city, and I think this is a valid criticism, often previously when we talked about active travel, it was code for talking about cycling. And what's different now is right at the front, literally right at the front of the active travel plan is improving everyday walking. The stuff we talked about, drop curbs, benches, wider footpaths, making it much easier for people just to make that short trip down to their local bus stop to get the bus into town rather than using their car. So, oh, getting back to your question, actually. So, yeah, I mean, there's no way that the council could afford to deliver this without working in partnership with the Scottish Government. And this is something I've learned as convener, is that whilst a lot of the things we're doing in Edinburgh are incredibly controversial at times, these are things which are happening right across Scotland, right across the UK, right across the world, really, this transition as we move to more sustainable travel. And also, we have to do this in partnership. So the Scottish Government, their policy is aligned with what we want to do, and luckily they've got the funding to deliver it, so absolutely we'll work with them. So we're already working with them on the bus priority measures. We spoke yesterday about £250,000 we're going to spend on the route from Balerno into the city centre to give bus drivers the power to manipulate the traffic lights as they're coming into town, so move a little bit faster. So we spoke about that. That's funded by the Scottish Government. The tram line, if we go ahead, the north-south route, Grant End, towards Dalkeith, that'll be funded in partnership with the Scottish Government. And these active travel plans will be funded with in partnership with the Scottish Government as well. I say in partnership, they'll be putting forward the vast bulk of the money, I hope.
Good, that's great. It is exciting, it's a surreal step change. I think that those were the words you've used before. Okay, and I have a final question for you. What's the rationale for having a no left turn coming up Leith Walk onto London Road? What's your rationale behind that?
So previously at that junction was quite a large roundabout. And as a driver and as a cyclist, that roundabout was never something I look forward to negotiating. So now the junction is incredibly simple. It's just a T junction, and because it's incredibly simple, it allows the traffic signal team to set that junction up. So there's only there's only two phases in the traffic light cycle.
So there's going to be people coming up Leith Walk, people coming down Leith Walk, and people coming from London Road and turning left and right?
So let me get the phases right. Apologies if I get this wrong. So the people coming from Picardy go down Leith Walk at the same time as people going from London Road go up to Picardy.
Okay.
And then the other phase is the traffic from London Road, from Leith Walk goes up to Picardy. I think that's the other phase. And at that phase, at the same time in that phase, we've got Green Man allowing.
When
I looked at the junction before Christmas, there was a lot of cars moving through that junction. But the London Road part, in terms of when you compare the number of cars to the number of people crossing, I would say there was more people, pedestrians crossing than cars.
Because that's an interchange for buses and stuff at the moment.
It was run up to Christmas time, of course, so maybe there's more people going to the city centre. But there was more people there as well. So what we have to remember, if we can delay cars for people, we could delay people for cars, but these people are all equal, so we have to get that right. So introducing the left turn from London Road from Leith Walk to London Road, introducing that turn would mean a third phase would have to be introduced in the traffic light cycle.
So it would be complicating the traffic movement and delaying everyone in that case.
Yeah, so in total, the number of people going through the junction per hour would reduce because they would spend more time at red than at green. So whereas just now, you know, I can't remember the exact balance between the two, but just now you're either stopped, there's either one phases go or the other phases go. But with if you allowed a left turn, there'd be two stop phases and one green. So it just makes it longer for everybody. Yeah. So it's kind of counterintuitive.
Yes,
but
it is.
But it does, it makes, it certainly makes life more frustrating for people who want to make that left turn. And I absolutely get that. But all I would say is I hope those people would just step back and look at the bigger picture and say, well, yes, inconvenience for me, but it's better for everyone. So I think it's changed a bit, the performance, and there's now there's far fewer people there now choosing to break the law. And we spoke to the team about this, I think.
That's the trams to New Haven team.
Yeah, so we've been speaking about this. And the belief is now we're down to a hardcore of people who are deliberately and knowingly breaking the law, and we think that once they all get their first fine from the police...
Yeah, they'll realise they can't do it.
Yeah.
So I hadn't really realised, it hadn't really sunk into me yet that eventually, once all the roadworks are away and everything else, that is actually going to be like a T-junction. That had kind of passed me by, because I think we've lived with a couple of roundabouts there for so long, and now we are going to...
And if you look on the website, crashmap.uk, you can see the outline of the old roundabout with the crashes around it. Hopefully we've got this much simpler junction and it'll be a much safer junction.
I hope so. Well, Transport Convener, thank you so very much for your time. It's always interesting. There's always far too much to discuss, actually, at any of our chats. And I know that you're dealing with an awful lot here, Scott, but lying with your lum reek, as they say, I suppose.
Thank you. Thank you again. Thank you.